KUOW podcasts are made possible by listener support. Become a new or renewing member today at KUOW.org.
We just kind of feel what the right direction is. If you get really strongly set in one direction that you think you should go, I think that's where things end.
What I heard was, this place is going to hell in a handbasket. You need to come back.
And I've had so many officers come up to me, not only from Kent, but now from the sheriff's office, who say, keep doing what you're doing, because this is exactly what we need.
We're going to hear from two candidates running for King County Sheriff. We're also going to hear from some folks who paint shoes and a poet who had a heart transplant, and the folks who are suing over the placement of a stadium downtown, all coming up today on Weekday. But we start with the King County Sheriff's race. Whoever wins the election to lead King County Sheriff's Department will have their work cut out for them. Two performance audits in recent months have criticized how the department handles internal investigations and use of force complaints. One investigator warned that the department could find itself facing similar scrutiny as the Seattle Police Department has faced, even maybe attracting its own Department of Justice review. Steve Strand is interim King County Sheriff. He took over when Sheriff Sue Rahr resigned to take up a training position. He is running for the office now. Strand was chief deputy at the county before that and police chief of Kent from 2005 to 2011. Among the work he did before that, he served in the State House in Minnesota. Steve Strand is endorsed by former King County Sheriff Sue Rahr, Lieutenant Governor Brad Owens, King County Prosecutor Dan Satterberg, Metropolitan King County Council members Larry Gossett, as well as King County Republican Party and the Municipal League of King County. Steve Strand, thanks for being here.
Good morning. Good to be here.
John Urquhart served as sheriff's deputy and sergeant, King County Sheriff's Office from 1988 to 2012. He was the department's spokesperson for 15 years in that capacity. He was also a policy advisor. He's endorsed by former King County Sheriff and current U.S. Representative Dave Reichert, Seattle City Attorney Pete Holmes, former U.S. Attorney John McKay, Washington State Speaker of the House Frank Chopp, the Executive Director of El Centro de la Raza, and King County Democratic Central Committee. I thought it was interesting. John Urquhart, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Steve.
I thought you guys have bipartisan endorsements, so I thought that was interesting.
Well, it's a nonpartisan office, and so that's the right thing to do.
It is indeed. All right, let's start with some – we'll go to general in a minute, but let's start with specifics. The King County's Office of Law Enforcement Oversight was started in 2006 to field complaints to deal with some issues. Now, auditors have found serious lapses, lax oversight, officer-involved shootings weren't being reviewed. There was a failure to investigate complaints, and the auditor set a tolerance for deputy misconduct. So you've made changes. You said you've beefed up the staff, the Internal Investigations Unit. You're requiring commanders to give you a monthly report on use of force by deputies. So then we should see a change in how the department is operating. Give me examples of what changes we've seen then.
Very specific changes that we've implemented. Again, this started quite some time ago when I first started at the sheriff's office. And among the more recent changes, as you mentioned, is a monthly use of force review that will involve all of our commanders, where every use of force will be reviewed and critiqued, really, by a large group of people. And that's critical. It's a critical change because it's going to really create a paradigm shift in the way that we create consistency and fairness and make sure that everyone is accountable, specifically our command staff. That's a huge issue for us. It's been an issue for years, and I identified that when I first started here. So to build that and to create the consistency as part of that use of force change. The other really critical change that I started when I first came in, Steve, is to return tangible, usable training, hands-on training. We had no in-service hands-on training at all when I started at the sheriff's office, and I worked with the executive and the council to budget about $250,000. That's what it costs to send all of our members through 1 8-hour training because of overtime costs. We worked because that was important to get that training back about things like defensive tactics, procedural justice, because comfort and feeling comfortable with use of force and making good decisions is really based on good training.
Why were there only 2 use of force investigations in all of 2011? That's what the auditor said. Very low.
Yeah, what the auditor said was the 2 use of force trainings, those were the trainings that went to internal investigations, and that goes back
investigations.
To investigations. It's not use of force incidents. It's where it was reviewed, and it's part of the procedural change that we have had to make. Again, it goes back some time, but part of that change is where are those reviewed? How do we make sure that they're consistent, they're being treated the same by everybody, and making sure that that's a robust review?
Why did this Office of Law Enforcement Oversight have such a critical audit? of the Sheriff's Department?
Well, actually, there were two audits. One was done by – both were external audits. And that's the first time the Sheriff's Office has ever been faced with external audits. Usually they're done by the King County Auditor's Office.
Sorry.
That's assigned to the – works for the King County Council. So these audits have a tremendous amount of credibility. And both were done by very, very highly respected firms. One came out in July. The other came out in September. And as you mentioned, Steve, they're so critical of the Sheriff's Office, so critical of the current leadership in the Sheriff's Office. And that's really what's driven the changes that are going on, not anything else that's happened other than the facts that situations that I brought up when I announced that I was running in April of this year. And everything that I said when I announced has been confirmed by these audits or by the Office of Law Enforcement Oversight.
But those audits were looking back on a series of more than just the previous year. They were looking back on the way that department has been running since this office was first started. And that's during your tenure.
Actually, no, that's not correct. The second audit looked at use of force issues. It looked at shooting review boards for about 10 years. The other audits really looked at what's going on right now. The Office of Law Enforcement Oversight only ordered the second audit. The first audit is required by county ordinance. And it's looking at the current situation in the Sheriff's Office.
But you're saying that what they looked at was just the last 12 months?
Essentially just the last 18 months. That's exactly right. How we're doing things right now.
And what changed? From your perspective, what changed between how they're doing things in the last 18 months and the previous, the amount of time you were there?
Well, I think there has been some things that have changed and some things that haven't changed. We have evolved over the years where we haven't kept up with best practices, where the leadership in the Sheriff's Office, including Sue Rahr, to a certain extent, hasn't kept up with best practices. Now, Steve has come in because according to Steve, at least, Sue Rahr identified problems and wanted him to come in and fix those problems. But the reality is he's been the sheriff for 22 months, either the real sheriff or the de facto sheriff for 22 months, and never started making any of these changes at all until after I brought them up, until after the audits pointed them out. This is, in fact, he's done just the opposite. When he gutted internal investigations, when he shipped a whole raft of investigations out to the precincts to be investigated, when 100 of those investigations couldn't be found once they hit the precinct level, and so it's only most recently that any changes whatsoever have been made.
Just what do you mean by couldn't be found?
They've disappeared. They went down to the patrol sergeants to be investigated, and they just disappeared. No one knows what happened to them once they got down there. They weren't followed up on. They weren't investigated.
You want to respond to that? And then I have a question about internal investigation.
Sure. And unfortunately, this, you know, this is a nonpartisan office. It's an important office. We have a $160 million budget. And the reason that former Sheriff Rahr is 100% behind my candidacy, the reason that she asked me to come to the sheriff's office, is we need qualified leadership to make these changes. A lot of the characterizations and the criticism that John is talking about are really driven by small bits of information rather than a comprehensive look at what this is. The two audits that we're talking about are not a surprise to me. None of the information there is a surprise to me. I knew this coming in, and the audits are part of our normal process, and they really provide great support, a third-party expert opinion to help support the changes that we are already making and we're already making. And so, again, I think they get politicized, and that's really not very helpful. The fact is we do have to move to best practices. I've led change before. I led it at the Kent Police Department, a large department, 115,000 people in the city of Kent, a very good department that I think was better. And to make those changes and to lead those changes, that's exactly what I'm doing.
Well, is he right to say that you gutted the internal investigations unit?
Internal investigations is a relatively small unit. One of the audits mentioned that it needs to be made larger. Part of our challenge at the sheriff's office, and again, I saw this when I came in, is it's a bit of a zero-sum game. Our resources have been so reduced over the past several years. 175 sworn positions have been lost over the past 5 years. Some priority decisions had to be made, and the first decision I made was to make sure that training was our first priority, so that every officer, every deputy, had good training in defensive tactics and communication skills. Internal investigations is like an emergency room. It really only deals with the most extreme cases. It doesn't make systemic structural change. And so I didn't return a lot of those bodies to internal investigations right away. We've now been put in a position where over the last 6 months we can. So I have made that I've certainly made it much more robust than it was, but it was understaffed for a period of time. That's a fact.
Because you can return it now. Why?
because we've made some of those changes. We've made some other structural changes within our organization so that I can now put one of our senior, most credible captains in there who has now gone and recruited very senior, very trusted sergeants to make sure that they're experienced and that's an organization that's very credible. People know that when the investigations are done, that they're done very, very well and in an expert way because we have senior people in there.
That's Steve Strawn. John Urquhart.
The reality is that my opponent sat in that very chair back in April and said what a robust internal investigations unit we had at the sheriff's office, and that just wasn't true. At that point in time, he had cut it by one-third. The two sergeants that were in there, the two investigators, had a combined experience doing internal investigations of about 7 months. His plan was to get rid of the captain, so there was no captain that would report to him, and again, he sent all these investigations down to patrol sergeants to basically be investigating their peers. That's not best practices from across the country. It's the same thing that Seattle did and got dinged on him by the Department of Justice. It's the same thing that he was dinged on by these audits. They say you can't do that. And in the process, again, we lost over 100 citizen complaints against officers that went down to the precinct to be investigated and never to be seen again. They have no idea what happened to those and what the outcome of those investigations were. It was a flawed plan in the first place. And it's the audits that are – and my criticism of that that's made the current leadership in the sheriff's office bring those back in, put a captain back in there and beef up the unit to where it should have been all along and where it had been for years and years and years and years.
Just real quick on that. Do you agree that investigations have been lost?
No, they're not lost. They are. In fact, if you go to page 15 of the Hillard-Hines report, that's one of our audits, the auditor's report, the King County auditor's report on page 15, puts the word missing in quotes, and it corrects the fact that they're not missing. They're simply in process. And again, it was reported out in the media. John keeps repeating it, thinking that it'll become true. It's a red herring. Big picture, the global picture, and again, from the perspective of the sheriff, not from a first-line supervisor, is we have a lot of structural changes to make. We're making those changes, and not everything is going to turn around overnight. We're making positive changes, substantial changes. Returning staff to internal investigations is part of many things we have to do involving training, supervision, and culture.
And I've got page 15 right here, and what it says is approximately 100 low-level complaints that IIU internal investigations referred back to the field supervisors for investigation were determined to be missing, i.e. entered into the system but later abandoned and not followed up on in the field. It's very, very clear. It says right there on page 15 that he talks about. And on page 56 of the Hillard-Hines audit, it says exactly the same thing. Approximately 100 cases had been forwarded to supervisors in the field for investigation, and they never made it back to IIU. There is no accounting for these items at this time. It couldn't be more clear.
And just to answer that quickly, the spreadsheet is on my desk, and the spreadsheet has all of those complaints, where they are and where the process is. Are they slow? Yes. We need to improve the process, but they're not missing.
Let me ask a broader question now. You were there for a long time. Whatever is being said about the department, there is something systemic that they're talking about. A major flaw in the department's procedures, one report said, is allowing deputies up to 72 hours to submit a written statement on their use of force, allowing them to reconstruct events rather than purely recollecting them. Well, was that not the case when you were there, and is that something that changed just recently, or has it always been that's how use of force statements were written up?
That's how it's always been. That's how it is to this day.
Is that a good way?
No. No, that's not best practices. Police work has evolved over the years, and it continues to evolve. And every 30 or 40 years, there's some revolutionary change.
Man, that's a long time.
In police work. Well, every 30 or 40 years, there's a revolutionary change. And you can probably remember the payoff scandals in Seattle of 30 or 40 years ago. And there was a huge change in what happened there with Chris Bailey coming in. Charles O'Carroll was kicked out. New police chief, new mayor. Well, we're at that same revolutionary stage right now, which is cameras, cell phone cameras, video cameras, dash cams, body cams. That's what's changing police work. And now the citizens out there can see what really goes on, what we've been doing for years and years and years, and they don't like it. So the question is, how do we keep up with that? How, as a police department, do we change? And one of the reasons we change is we get rid of this 72-hour requirement that is not best practice from across the country. The DOJ doesn't like it. These audits don't like it. And other more progressive police departments, whether it's Cincinnati or L.A., have gotten away from that.
All right,
that needs to be changed.
Let me touch on 72, then I want to come back to a larger question after
the
break.
Sure. To the greater point, we keep using the phrase best practices, and that's exactly right. One of the audits, the retired chief of San Jose was talking to our county council and to myself, and he said that for a progressive area in Seattle, we're not very progressive in our practices with law enforcement. He's right. I completely agree with that. As somebody who has worked in another agency, who has experience leading another agency, moving to best practices is why I took this job. And I agree that the 72-hour requirement that needs to be changed, and I am in the midst of negotiating that change. And I'll go back to the fact that the audits are not some sort of gotcha moment. They are good support. They're expert best practices support for me to help to make those changes. That's why I came here.
All right, let me take a break. We'll come back with John Urquhart and Steve Strand on Weekday on KUOW Seattle.
KUOW News and Information.
Pacific Northwest Ballet presents dance classics, but artistic director Peter Bowles says PNB's also about new work.
I think it's important to preserve those commissions and those risks that aren't even audience taste yet.
I'm Marcy Silman. Join me Saturday, November 3rd for PNB's All Premiere for brand new ballets. With Front Row Center, you get discounted tickets for the performance, plus a post-show conversation with Peter Bowles and his dancers. Front Row Center, it's like a book club, but for the arts.
Support for KUOW comes from Seattle Cancer Care Alliance, recognizing people have a choice about where they're treated for cancer. At SCCA, doctors from Fred Hutchinson Cancer Research Center, UW Medicine, and Seattle Children's unite to turn cancer patients into cancer survivors. More at seattlecca.org.
54 degrees in Seattle, expecting a high today near 61 with rain. Tonight's low around 51 degrees with showers and possibly a thunderstorm.
John Urquhart served in the Sheriff's Department in King County for how many years total?
24 years
full-time. 24 years full-time.
But only working downtown for 10 years, not the 15 that you mentioned.
Oh, I thought you were. Thought that part of that was the vice work. That
well, I've downtown. Done lots of other things, but not the downtown.
You were downtown there.
Behind a desk job.
All right.
Only 10 years.
And Steve Strand has been Kent Police Chief. He's also been King County Sheriff for the last year. All right, one of the problems that it seems that these auditors and other people looking at it have pointed to is that you have, and including the person who's supposed to be in charge of fielding and dealing with the complaints, is that you have a King County Police Officers Guild that is not collaborative, I believe was a nice way that person put that. Steve Strand, you said you were in the process of negotiating that 72 hours. Is that who you're negotiating with? Is that something to negotiate with the King County Police Officers Guild, or is that something else?
Yeah, we're negotiating with the Guild as well as all of our other labor groups. And we're in the midst of that right now as the sheriff because of a charter change recently. I now have working conditions as part of my responsibility for contracting and for bargaining. As the sheriff, and again, it's one of the many things on my plate right now, but the significant change is we now have a labor negotiator as part of the sheriff's office, and we have really a policy-driven, business plan-driven strategy that it's not reactive, it's not political. It is driven by our department needs and what is best, in other words, what are best practices, as we keep saying. What are national best practices and how do we move to that? The other thing I would mention is, talked a little bit about my experience as a council member, a legislator, a municipal chief. I have negotiated contracts from all of those perspectives, which I think gives me a good a set of tools to deal with the guild. I certainly respect their role, but I'm going to advocate as the sheriff for the taxpayer, for citizens, for oversight to make sure that we're doing it the right way.
Could you? What do you think?
I think we have a different view about the guild and about unions in general. I've heard Steve say on several occasions that the guild, our guild, has too much power, that the pendulum has swung way too far. And I think that's a kind of a confrontational way to describe it.
Well, the guys that were talking to the auditor said that they're not collaborative.
Well, not being collaborative is a different thing than saying that the guild or any union has too much power. Everything that they have is bargained. In other words, they got something, or we got something, we being management, got something for giving them the ability to do something, or us not having the ability to do something. I don't think it's progressive, and I don't think it's a way we shouldn't be fighting with them, publicly fighting with them and saying that they've taken something from us, because they haven't taken a thing. We've given it up. Management has given it up if they are able to do something that we don't like.
All right. Well, if you're the sheriff, what's your relationship with the guild?
My relationship with the guild is going to be very, very good. I've met with the guild leadership. My new undersheriff has met with the guild leadership, has met with the guild attorneys. It's going to be collaborative. That's the best way to put it. It's going to be collaborative. I'm not going to fight with them. We have a relationship, certainly within a union. Management and union have a relationship much like a prosecutor and a defense attorney. And there are times that we're going to have different things that we want to accomplish. But if we go in there with an open mind, if we go in there with a collaborative approach, if they trust us, management, and they do trust me, then I think we can make the changes that need to be made. And well, there are changes, of course.
All right. Well, I want to know what those changes – go ahead. And then I want to know what those changes are.
Respectfully point out a couple things. First of all, John has only been a guild member. He's never looked at this from a different perspective. He's never approached it from a different perspective. Secondly, he referred to the person he says he will appoint as his number two, her relationships with labor groups in Spokane when she was chief there. I don't know. I would describe them probably not as collaborative. And then thirdly, I've been working very closely and very well with Executive Constantine to ensure that our relationships with labor groups are appropriate, but also that we're very straight with each other and very honest with each other. If you look at Executive Constantine's record with labor groups, it hasn't been confrontational, it's been collaborative, and I take the same approach. But at the same time, making sure that we're not playing games, that we're being honest with each other. I can't say this any better than this. I'm running for election this fall. It would be very easy for me to take shots at the Guild. The Guild, in terms of their perception after not taking the cut a few years ago that every other labor group did in King County, it would be very easy for me to be very negative and to sort of go after the Guild. I don't do that because it's not my style. It's not the right thing to do. I approach it from a public policy perspective. What is best for the county, for the sheriff's office, and for the labor groups? Because we need to be fair.
All right. Let me come back to the question of what changes need to be made. But let me just read you this. The director of King County Office Law Enforcement Oversight, Charles, is it Gaither?
Gaither.
Charles Gaither, who was hired for the position last fall, said he thought things would be tough in King County, but did not anticipate what he called a complete breakdown of communications with the King County Police Officers Guild. What's going on there?
And John and I agree on this. I think that there has been a lot of management rights given up over time, and that's not the Guild's fault. The Guild they were advocating for their members. But over a period of many, many years, and many of those years, by the way, I was the chief in Kent and John was within the sheriff's office, those management rights were given away over, again, a long, long time. We need to begin to balance that out again. It's not going to happen overnight. But to take those management rights back, to do it in a respectful way that respects the role of our labor groups, but at the same time is very deliberative. We need to be deliberative and specific in what we need to do to be fair.
I believe he just called you out on your experience. You said you were a policy advisor for Sheriff Reichert as well as Sue Rohr.
And my opponent does that all the time. The inference was that since I was an insider, since I was there, I must have given these rights away. And the reality is until this year, this will be the first year that the King County Sheriff has ever even negotiated a contract or signed the contract.
Right. Voters changed that.
Voters changed that. The last contract 5 years ago was negotiated by Ron Sims and the King County Police Officers Guild. Sheriff had nothing to do with that, and I certainly had nothing to do with that. That's just malarkey.
All right, well, I want to know what changes need to happen so that we don't have a report that says, for example, deputies are submitting reports that are often truncated and self-serving.
It's a question of leadership. It's a question of leadership from the top down, and as well as training. We have to train our sergeants. My idea was to start a sergeant's academy, and I said that on April 24th. Now, all of a sudden, we've got a sergeant's academy that's starting. That's one of the things that needs to happen, is we have to have the leadership that works all the way down and holds people accountable. We have to hold our deputies accountable for doing a good job, for doing the job that they're getting paid to do, that they're expected to do. And make sure that they do it. It's as simple as that. And we're not doing that. The audits have pointed that out time and time and time again, and they don't go after our deputies. That's what's so interesting, I think, about both of these audits. Our deputies are not the focus of the audit. It's the management in the sheriff's office that's the focus of these audits.
Well, may I say that when I was looking at responses, the one response that kept coming up in the Seattle Times that looked at the articles that looked at year two in the article was critical of the idea that you'd appoint somebody from Spokane who had trouble dealing as a manager with her deputies.
Mm-hmm. You've got to look at the whole picture there, I think. Spokane was a very, very troubled department, no question about it. I mean, they had a officer that basically killed a man, has been found guilty in federal court, was a cover-up inside the department. And Ann Kirkpatrick went into that department with the clear understanding that she was supposed to make changes. And as my opponent has said time after time after time, change is difficult. Change is difficult. We know that. She had tremendous support from the other unions, the command staff unions in the department. She had the tremendous support from the mayor at the time, from the U.S. attorney. She did a very good job. She was there for 5 years. Ann Kirkpatrick is got 15 years as a experienced police chief, more than my opponent, certainly more than me. She's got a law degree. She's got a master's degree. She's taught for the FBI. She's been to the FBI National Academy. She knows what she's doing. She and I are going to make a very, very good team when we get into the sheriff's office. And she's a woman. We need more diversity at the command level inside the sheriff's office.
I know you don't want to respond to that, but in responding, Surar in part stepped down because she was concerned about the training that sheriff deputies were getting in this state and, you know, even further out.
Yeah, and it seems like a contradictory argument that John just made about change in leadership. But speaking of leadership and the changes that we need to make, I'll give you a specific example that I think you were asking for, Steve. Shooting review boards, use of force groups that we're now starting to put together to ensure consistency and good review of use of force. Ensuring that that is made up of management and is not heavy on guild members, that's a critical change that we are now negotiating and making. Ensuring that that group has teeth, that we can move forward not just with discipline, but with training and policy and culture of our individual units. All those things matter. That's the leadership I have been providing ever since I got here, because we have to do all of it.
Is there a role? Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I was just going to say, we can't just focus purely on discipline. That's part of it. But it really has to do with training, supervision, and culture, changing that culture. And that is the quiet servant leadership that I have been providing since the day I walked in. I have led that change before because I have been a municipal chief before, and I have the qualifications to continue to lead that.
Real quick, just what's the role of civilians in that?
I think that civilian oversight is very appropriate. I think it's critical in ensuring transparency. In other words, I often use the phrase, does this pass the public smell test?
And will they be part of the shooting review board?
Yes, they will. That is my goal.
You were going to say, sir?
What I was going to say is that my opponent has been the acting sheriff, the de facto sheriff, or the real sheriff for 22 months. None of the changes that he's talking about occurred until either I made an issue of them or until the audits made an issue of them. In 2011, we had four officer-involved shootings. We have a policy requirement. They have to be a shooting review board within 30 days. That wasn't held until, in two cases, a year after the shooting, and in the other two cases, months and months after the shooting, and in all four cases, not until I made an issue of it, made a campaign issue of it in April. All these changes that he's talking about, none of them were made, despite his prior management experience, despite the fact that he was brought in to the sheriff's office to make these changes, none of these were made until after they became a campaign issue. And he had ample time to do that.
Why didn't you get those reviews earlier?
That's simply inaccurate. All the changes that we've been enacting have been a progression ever since I first started at the sheriff's office at the beginning of 2011 last year. And again, John has a lot of access to information in our agency. He knows what we're doing, and he's characterizing everything as simply reactive. It is not reactive. It is strategic. We've been proactive about making these changes, and it's really just been a progression.
Well, let me give you another example.
Just real quick, did you move to the reviews soon enough, or did you wait a year or two?
It took longer than we intended to, simply because, again, part of our bureaucratic process had to be changed, and we made that change.
There was no bureaucratic process that was changed. They just were ignored because, as the audits say, management in the sheriff's office does not take discipline seriously, does not take their processes seriously.
Now, is that the sheriff?
Over and over again.
Is that the sheriff, or is that down the line?
That's the sheriff. He's absolutely responsible for that. He sets the tone. The sheriff sets the tone, sets the tenor, sets the culture, sets the values of the sheriff's office. Let me give you one more reaction.
Didn't we just go back now to the problem of the guild again?
No, not at all. The guild has nothing to do with that whatsoever.
Management within that hierarchy.
has nothing to do with the Guild. It has a question of just following our processes, the process that we have in the manual, for example, in our operations manual that says shooting review boards shall be held within 30 days of the inquest or the completion of the investigations, and they weren't. I mean, you can't argue that. That's just a fact. That's
and you had that fact. during the time that you were serving in the Sheriff's Department?
No, that was not my responsibility. I was not
that.
A policymaker.
I get
a
that.
Policy advisor.
I just wanted, but the people you're advising, did they act as quickly as they should have?
No, they didn't. And I wasn't advising him.
I get you.
I was not his policy advisor.
I get you. I'm not putting you on it on that, but I'm just trying to get some history of it. You want to respond to that, and then I'll ask my history question.
Just very quickly, when you get right down to it, I've been the sheriff since April. We're making very positive changes, and there's a lot of changes going on. We're going in a very, very positive direction, and it comes down to our retired media relations officer wants you to basically take a culture change that has taken years to develop. I've been the sheriff since April. We're making progress, and he's trying to suggest that the ultimate insider is the right person to make that change, and I obviously disagree. I think someone with qualified, experienced, a strong past record of leadership in law enforcement is the right person. That's really what this election comes to.
You know he's going to have to respond to the ultimate insider statement. And
of
then
course.
I'll ask
I love
question.
I mean, I just – I hear that. I mean, it's such a political statement. Insider is bad. Outsider is good. Or you change it around. Outsider is good. Insider is good. Those are just words.
Well,
in this case, they're used
the
as
incumbent.
Political words. And in fact, he is the insider, if you want to go that way. He hasn't been the sheriff since April. He's been the sheriff, the de facto sheriff, since January of 2011, because Surar told everybody in writing that he would be making the day-to-day operational decisions inside the sheriff's office.
Yeah, but she
in
was
January
still there.
Of 2011, the 800-page operations manual, every reference to the sheriff making a decision was changed to the chief deputy making that decision. He has been making the decisions ever since January of 2011. And to say that I'm an insider and he's an outsider, that just isn't correct. He's been the insider for 22 months. It was his responsibility with all this experience that he talks about. That's all he talks about is the two chief jobs that he's had. All this experience, he should have seen this coming. He didn't see any of this coming until the audits made an issue of it, until I made an issue of it.
All right, I have a last question here, I guess, because it's a broad one. One of the recommendations was develop leadership expectations that all complaints, misconduct, and policy violations will be reported. Given that statement, I want you to just a sense from you both, what's the morale among the deputies, and what's the necessity for training to raise their morale?
The element of training and consistency is what's going to result in better morale for our deputies. The inconsistency and focusing purely on the actions of the deputy is what hurts morale. That's the change we're making. The use of force panels that we've gone to make sure that we're consistent in holding our captains accountable, and the fact that we have now instituted a new policy that will hold managers accountable for failure to supervise, for failure to intervene when use of force is being used inappropriately. That's a change that I have made. And again, I think that's going to improve morale overall because the deputies will see that it's not just their actions, but ensuring that they're trained, they're well-equipped, they're comfortable with being able to use force appropriately, and that their commanders and managers will be held accountable as well for making sure that they're doing their job. That's where we're going with this.
My congratulations to Steve. Failure to supervise is a huge change. It's a perfect change. It's exactly what we needed. And it came directly out of the audits. They were exceedingly critical of the sheriff's office for not having that policy in place. And now it's in place. It's a reaction to the audits. He's had 22 months to make that change based on his experience, based on all of his knowledge of past practice, and he didn't do it. He didn't do it until the audits pointed out that it was needed.
What are the tools?
So it's good that it's happening now, but you got to look at the reasons why it's happening.
What are the tools needed when you're sheriff, when he's sheriff? What are the tools needed to give officers discipline and, I guess, latitude might be a way to look at it? I mean, so they have the discipline, they're getting the management they need, and yet at the same time, they can operate on the street effectively.
I think they have to have confidence in their managers. confidence in their leaders. We have to have the leadership from above.
So, but what does that give me some specifics? You could feel free to use the Seattle Police Department if you'd like as an example.
Seattle Police Department is a great place to use an example because it's real clear what's happened in the Seattle Police Department. Because you asked about morale, Steve. You asked about morale. The arrests that the Seattle Police Department, the bookings that they're making into the King County Jail are down by 50% because the morale is so low. And the morale comes, as Steve said, it comes from the leaders in place. And the morale in the sheriff's office, which you asked about, is in the toilet. It's absolutely horrible. I get an email or a phone call every single day from somebody in the sheriff's office that says, my God, have you any idea what's going on here?
Well, what's
you
their example?
You have to win this. Well, one of the examples is the new plan that has been in place since May to redo staffing in unincorporated King County. And what it's resulted in is massive amounts of overtime. Burglary calls, for example, that are waiting 10 hours to be investigated. Very low staffing. Situations where there's no backup for officers, where it's unsafe for the citizens, where we've taken all of our deputies out of the Skyway neighborhood, for example, for 8 hours a day for 2.5 months. That's a neighborhood of 15,000 people. Because they reduced the minimum staffing levels there, so we couldn't afford to keep a deputy or two deputies in the Skyway neighborhood. This is part one of the plans that's just destroyed the morale of the sheriff's office. The concept was to save overtime, but at what cost?
I see. So it was an overtime concept. He's portraying a picture of chaos
very quickly.
You have a whole minute.
Morale is not down. We have people who are uncomfortable with change. Others who think it's exactly where we should go, which is not unusual in a department going through transition. And at the same time, John will talk a lot about criticism of changes we've made. He'll characterize it in a certain way. Let me be very frank about the last thing he just talked about. We went through a lean exercise with Executive Constantine's staff. It was a very good exercise. It was innovative. It was part of our change. It was difficult on some of our deputies because very different than what we did before. The result has been substantial overtime savings. And as was announced by Executive Constantine and myself, along with Councilmember McDermott, the budget chair, just last week, we are now able to add real bodies, 14 more deputies, to the street. We're hiring them as we speak, and they'll be going through the academy. They'll be on the road this summer and fall. This is real change. It's significant change. It's the right way to do it, and that's what I'm focusing on as the sheriff.
All right, gentlemen, I'll leave it there. I appreciate you taking the time to talk to us. Steve Strand is the interim sheriff of King County. John Urquhart is running for the office of sheriff. Thank you both.
Thanks, Steve.
Thank you, Steve.
This is Weekday.
This is KUOW 94.9. Poet Dean Young recently had a heart transplant. He talks about how that's affected his writing this morning at 10:05.
Support for KUOW comes from area schools affiliated with the Pacific Northwest Association of Independent Schools. More information about open houses, financial aid, and the range of education choices such as Spruce Street School are online at pnais.org.
Thanks to everyone who helped make our fall membership drive a big success. If you didn't get a chance to donate, you still can do that and make your pledge at kuow.org.
Support for KUOW comes from University Bookstore. Jan Brett's new book is the story of a turtle with a garden growing on its back, yearning to return to the wild. Brett will read and discuss Mossy from Putnam on Sunday, October 21st at 4:30 p.m. at U Bookstore on the Ave. Tickets at U Bookstore.
54 degrees in Seattle. Look for a high near 61 this afternoon with rain expected. Tonight's low around 51 degrees with showers and possibly a thunderstorm.
All right, now our On the Job series continues. Katie Sewell's here. She visited the six artists behind the hand-painted shoe company Hourglass Footwear. They're in Ballard, huh?
Yeah, artistic venture based in Ballard anyway. They paint all over the city in their respective studios. But once a week they get together for a weekly meeting. These women paint on shoes rather than canvas, even though they're all classically trained in various ways. So I went into eavesdrop on their weekly meeting. And as you know, meetings are incredibly dynamic places, right, Steve? So the women are not identifying themselves every moment they speak during my interview. So to get started, I figured we would meet all six of them, hear what kind of painting they were engaged in before they started painting shoes. And so let's do that. Get to know them.
Yeah, I'm Lisa. I'm one of the partners in Hourglass, also a painter. I was an illustrator for years, and I also studied Japanese sumi painting and kanji, so I have a lot of calligraphy and Japanese elements in the work that I do.
Hi, I'm Kira. I'm the other founder of Hourglass, and I'm a portrait artist. I was also doing a lot of marketing and PR before this started, so it's a good way to balance the two.
I'm Hillary. I'm an oil painter, primarily. I also do a lot of clothing art, like with fabric paints, dresses, and shirts, and a random hodgepodge of artsy things.
But in general, when you paint, you like to do it on things that people are wearing?
Generally, yeah. I love doing dresses and shoes, especially making a match and cheesy girl things like that.
I'm Debbie, okay. And I'm a fine art painter. I like to do elemental designs, so it looks almost like an impossible shoe, like Kira's shoes. I painted to look like solid pieces of turquoise, so it looks like they'd be really heavy, but they're not.
I'm Jeannie. I'm a fine art painter as well. I use acrylic, and I'm also a henna artist. I've been doing henna in Seattle for a long time, and so I incorporate a lot of traditional henna patterns in my shoes.
And you? I'm Rachel, and I studied scientific illustration, so I love doing kind of floral stuff, botanical things.
So on the side, do you do scientific illustrations for, I don't know, guidebooks or something?
I have,
like that?
Yeah. I have. I'm a full-time mommy, too, so it takes up some time.
Yeah. So Kira and Lisa run the day-to-day business operations for Hourglass Footwear, and the rest of the team are painting shoes off on their own. The weekly meeting that we just eavesdropped on lets them spend a little time together and also get feedback on the different designs that they're inventing. So let's listen in as Hillary gets feedback for the very first time on a custom order she's been working on.
This is the one I was talking to Karen Lisa a little bit about that she wanted.
Hey, ooh, those look great.
Okay, well, that's a good sign.
Those look great.
Those are gorgeous. So what were you? What was your concern?
Wow. Well, she wanted chocolate, tan, what else? Outlined in black, and then coral and scarlet and teal. And
those are beautiful.
Huh. Wait, okay. Green. Well, maybe it's just in my head because I've been staring at it too long.
Oh, good.
But yeah, color-wise, good? Okay. Yeah. Never mind.
Really nice.
So how long does it take customs to do, like, one pair?
We always know right away who's going to do it, other than customs, for the artist to be taking them less than 2 hours so they just don't get bogged down. Mm-hmm. We want it to be fun and fast.
But when you get, like, 10 orders of the same design, it can just be streamlined because you can just kind of assembly lines. Approach it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you knock sometimes a whole hour off.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm.
If you can just not have to clean your brush and just move through it.
Mm-hmm. We're a small company and we're doing everything ourselves. So this is our photo station. Right. So I take all the photos with my iPhone, and when Lisa works at them a little bit.
This card.
Yes.
Yeah. She's standing on that.
Standing on the table, modeling shoes.
Oh, head against the ceiling.
The shoes are about half a size too small, so she was like, get the picture! Yes.
So when we're millionaires, we'll look back and... Small company for now.
Where do you see yourself going? What are you hoping for?
Onward and upward. we have a lot of things on the horizon. Since we started the company, though, it's been interesting and kind of a good life lesson, too, that we just kind of feel what the right direction is. If you get really strongly set in one direction that you think you should go, I think that's where things end. So we've been really conscious of being open to...
Flexible.
Yeah, being flexible. And new windows are opening up all the time, so...
Our biggest goal right now is Kira and I are doing this full-time. Yeah. We want all of our artists to be able to be doing this full-time, too. And so to get to that point where we're steady, everybody's busy, everybody's happy, enjoying what they're doing... And we're not far from that, I don't think, but full-time employment would be great for everybody, right?
I heard full-time.
Yeah, I heard it too. Yeah.
So I'm curious, though, since you all were sort of trained in your different ways to, a lot of you, to do your art on canvas, why make the transition to shoes?
We were sitting together as a group brainstorming, what can we do? How can we apply our art in a way that is going to sell further than art on walls?
Yeah.
And so we actually talked about fabric design. Mm-hmm. We talked about starting an illustration agency. this kind of made sense because we all like shoes, but then to apply that in a practical way, we always say affordable luxuries, something that people can buy and use a lot.
It seems like if a bunch of artists were really talented were painting shoes, it would cost a fortune.
Yes.
So how do you make it so that it doesn't cost a fortune?
like we were saying earlier, our artists are quick. The designing process is the most difficult part of it. So once you get used to doing them over and over again, it can take somebody an hour, hour and a half per pair.
We're wholesaling our shoes.
We're wholesaling our shoes. Yep.
All of the artists work in their own studios. Some of them have home studios, some of them have art studios, but then we meet here. We have this dream of someday buying this building and having all artist studios downstairs. I don't know how much the woodworkers would like that, but we could maybe do half woodwork and half artist studios.
You know, I think it's fun as artists too, because art tends to be such a solitary
yes.
thing. Yeah, and to yes. have, you know, it's not that we're working together on a project necessarily, but just everybody doing their individual art projects around in a room is the most heartwarming, satisfying feeling yeah, ever. Totally. I think it's like...
It's great.
Yeah, it takes away the loneliness of being an artist.
Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. Do you want to add something?
Well, I was just going to say that it helps find like, away the crazies a little bit. Because sometimes when you're like 10 hours just in your own little corner painting shoes, like it kind of gets to you after a while.
Just having the feedback and the support.
Yeah.
Once you have the design done and it becomes like assembly line a little bit because it helps you go faster, is that creative enough as artistic and creative people?
I'd say so. I think it depends on the design. Like, I have some designs that I'm always just looking forward to painting. I don't really know why, necessarily. Like, some are just more fun. But if I do one that I've done it 10 times or 50 times, and I'm just kind of like, wow, I don't want to do this, then we can go to Karen Lisa and say, hey, I'm really not feeling this anymore, and they take it down.
Which one can you point to one that people really like that's over
yes.
here?
Yes. the best Facebook response we've ever had is this pair, painted by Jeannie. And we call them silk stockings.
Yeah. So these are kind of like it's kind of like a nylon sort of a design.
I was looking at pictures of lace. I was looking at pictures of lace for what seemed like ever. And and then I came up with the repeating floral pattern with kind of a lace netting background.
I think they look like fishnet
stockings.
Yes, that's the word I was trying to think of. Very intricate.
Has there ever been a pair that people really didn't like?
We did a custom one time. Debbie did a custom.
You didn't tell me this yet?
No, the custom ones. No, the parrot. There was a parrot, and it was. I actually liked the shoes. I thought they were cool, but it's an acquired taste. Pink and lime green, and lots of sort of weird angles, and nude.
And gray.
And parrots.
Didn't they have gray in it too, or something?
Yeah. We put them on our Facebook page just to see what the response would be, and just about everyone. Like, no way. But the person that they were for loves them. Yes. And that's all that matters. Yes. So I actually thought they were cool. I thought they were cute. Fun. Yeah.
The two of you who are partners, I'm imagining that you're doing a lot more of the business end of things.
Yes,
so
definitely.
Also, as creative people who tend to not want to do the business end of things a lot of times, how is it going?
It's interesting because we are both very businessy creative people. And when you have a day job, you know, I mean, art tends to be when you have the time on the weekend at night sort of a thing. But here, even though we're busy all the time, we're thinking in art terms, art thoughts a lot, you know, so we'll everywhere, you know, out in the world, we're referencing and being reminded of things that we can bring into the business and make it more artistic.
Do you have any more you want to show off?
Do we have any of the Requiem ones?
No,
unfortunately. That was the first really edgy shoe that Debbie did. It was
just like I really liked the show Dexter, and so I painted these shoes bright glossy white, and then did a blood splatter pattern that just went all over the shoes. And I thought they were really sexy.
They are. There's something about the sort of goriness of them mixed with the sexiness of the shape of the shoe.
It's not necessarily a polite blood splatter either. No. It's like it's pretty...
Because I do realistic painting, and so it looks like blood.
Yeah, it does.
And so I really want to see, like, I had in my mind, like, you know, some businesswoman getting out of a cab or something and, like... or like, walking into a meeting kind of like no holds barred, like, you know?
Were you all very creative people growing up?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Totally.
Oh, yeah. I
did a lot of drawing and melting crayons on the wood stove. My dad used to get so mad. I would crawl behind the back and do it there and make patterns out of the melted wax. Come around and be like, what? No! No! I told you not to do that. But yeah. I used to draw galloping horses all the time. And herds of galloping horses. And my mom, she told me a few years ago, she was like, you know, there was a lot of women stuck at home in this really tiny town with all their kids, so everybody was hanging out together. And she said, none of the other kids drew animals that were in motion. And I was like, I don't know how to draw them standing still.
My favorite part about this company is this group of people.
Well, like Lisa said earlier, if we weren't doing this, we'd be doing something else.
Yeah.
So we would be together. Whether it was shoes or painted cats on sweatshirts.
And why not
shoes? Goodness, we're not doing that. I don't want to do cats on sweatshirts, I'm just saying. Put that out to the universe. No cats.
Let's just really, really briefly talk about the reason you were able to start was because other people supported you.
Yes.
You did a Kickstarter campaign to try to get
$10,000. That's right. Yep. It was just the most amazing thing. The faith of people that love us and want us to succeed, but then also the faith of strangers in this product. It was amazing, amazing, amazing thing.
And to get that feedback where we knew that it was a great idea, we knew that it was going to be awesome, but putting it out there to the public in this sort of a very test format was a little scary. And to get, I mean, that just catapulted us, not just financially, but it catapulted, you know, our drive and our ambition and our excitement about the project because so many people were so excited about it. Yeah, for only being in business for 2.5 months now, we're exactly where we want to be.
Yeah.
So those are the six women behind the local hand-painted shoe company, Hourglass Shoes. You can see pictures of their shoes, including a picture of me actually wearing a pair while interviewing them, which I did not do the entire time, but it was a funny photo op, so we did that. And I never wear platform shoes, as you well know.
I think I'd like to see that.
Yeah, so you can find it on our Facebook page. Search for Weekday on KOW. And it is interesting to see what kind of thing art they're creating on shoes. So
yeah.
I recommend you do it in person.
Shoes are the new hats.
There you are.
So people will
maybe
want...
they'll do hats next.
No, they have to stick with shoes. There's so much to do. You need to. We need to send you to more places where you're sweating, I think.
Yeah, dirty jobs.
A little more dirty jobs, I think.
I am okay with that.
Micro is not doing that anymore, so I don't see why we can't send you to, you know, where things are being mucked and stirred.
As you well know, I'm pretty much willing and game to try just about anything.
So these are interesting jobs. If you have an interesting job that you would like Katie to shadow you, please email us. We're not calling them dirty jobs. We're calling them on the job.
You can just put job in the subject line and I'll be looking for them.
You don't think people will be thinking that, you won't be thinking that somebody's applying?
No, I think I can read and find a differentiation there.
So an interesting job, an interesting place. Where have you gone? You've gone to these ladies and they're painting shoes.
Yeah, we've done a couple different horse things.
Right, there's many, many animal things.
Horse therapy and then we've done surgery in the past. I went out with some race car drivers.
Yeah. Not enough mucking, though. I think a little more mucking.
We did a stuntmen.
That's right.
That was fun. But really, I'm not an incredibly squeamish person, so I'm willing to try everything. So use your imagination. If you think, oh my gosh, you could never handle my job, I might be able to. So
all right.
Write to me. Let's find
crime scene cleanup coming your way.
Yeah, well, I'd be willing.
So email us, weekday@KOW with job in the title, and we'll send Katie out to get mucked about.
And now, the sound of the day.
Popcorn? Firecrackers? No. That's the sound of 7-year-old Henry having just about as much fun as a kid can have. Henry's father, Chris, who recorded this sound, recently received a well-packed gift. Came with 18 feet of bubble wrap. So he rolled it onto the floor. Henry started running around on it, something that left Henry both winded and ecstatic. There was a nice little dance. He got a little excited, a little extra excited right there. That's Henry, 7-year-old Henry, jumping on the bubble wrap. Who doesn't like to do that? You could have fun all the time. Thanks, Chris, for capturing that moment, sharing it with us. What are the sounds that are happening in your life? Joyful moments or, just moments where you go, oh, when will that stop? Record 30 seconds of those interesting sounds. Email them to us, the sounds of your day. Email them to weekday@kuow.org. Put sound of the day in the subject line. Send us a story behind that sound. We get to all experience your life through sound. This is KUOW. We're going to talk with Roger Ferris next hour. We're also going to hear from a poet who writes about heart and the heart. He had written about heart long before he had a heart transplant, but he's going to talk about that. And we're going to find out and get an update on the Longshoremen decision to sue over the arena review process. All that and more coming up. Stay with us.
This is 94.9 KUOW FM Seattle, 1340 KUOW Tumwater, 90.3 KQOW Bellingham, and Digital HD Services.
Support for KUOW comes from Pacific Medical Centers, providing same-day, evening, Saturday, Sunday, and online doctor appointments.
Thanks for listening. The program you just heard was made possible by the financial support of our listeners. Support this program and others like it by making a pledge today at kuow.org.